With Eastman Financial Report. This is Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Friday, January 26th, fast approaching the end of the first month of the 2024 election year. It's going to be an interesting year. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate your viewership. And as you know, WVW-TV, the network upon which this program is broadcast, is not a commercial network. We are a sponsored network, and it's the kind and generous donations by viewers such as yourself that goes a long way toward keeping our programming current and consistent and online 24/7. So we look to thank you for that. If you're certainly a viewer, we appreciate your viewership. And if you're a sponsor or considering making a donation or a gift to WVW-TV, you can reach out to the WVWFoundation.com and make a contribution. And we'd certainly appreciate any help you can provide, because what we do here on this network is we create content that is very, very important in the marketplace of ideas. Of course, as Americans, under our First Amendment freedom of speech, we have created a very robust economy and a very robust society, because different viewpoints are matter. They matter and they're respected. And when all of these viewpoints go into the great marketplace of ideas, then people can shop around, of course, and formulate opinions based upon a very diverse universe of information. And that's why networks such as WVW-TV play such an important role in providing content to the great marketplace of ideas. And that's why we're protected under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. Because the very first amendment to that August document was to make it very clear that people in this country have freedom of speech and that they can express their ideas without fear of retribution from a king or a government. And that's a very valuable thing to have. So we appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to hear our messages across the spectrum of programming available. And we appreciate not only your viewership, but of course, any sponsorship that you feel necessary or available. We also have corporate sponsors, of course, and the corporate sponsor for my program is a company called Swiss America Trading. And Swiss America is an American company, and it is based in Arizona. And of course, what they do is provide a market for precious metals. And we're going to talk a little bit about some news in that sector today. But Swiss America is a great company. If you're thinking of buying precious metals to add to your holdings or your portfolio, or as perhaps a gift or some sort of a memento, you will certainly want to reach out to somebody with great expertise in that space. And Swiss America, of course, has been a longtime sponsor of WVW-TV, but more importantly, they've been a longtime player in that market. And the people who work at Swiss America are professionals, they're experts, and if you're going to dabble in that space, you will want to deal with a company that has a great reputation and a great knowledge base. I mean, the people who work there, that's their day job. They're experts in the field. So, you can buy gold and silver online on the internet, but when you do such a thing, you will want to make sure that you're purchasing, if you're buying a 1 ounce gold coin, you expect to have 1 ounce of pure gold in the coin. And of course, if you deal with a reputable dealer like Swiss America, you're going to and rest assured that the product they sell you is exactly what you're paying for. So if you want to give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, tell them Dan Eastman sent you from the Eastman Financial Report, and they'll be happy to send you all sorts of free information, not a pressure call situation. They'll send you information so that you can learn more about the sector. Or you can go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and get the same free information and shop around and see what they have to offer and how, coins and bullion are sized and priced and delivered. And you can see all of that on their website. And if you use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, then they'll be happy to send you free information on how the market works, and you'll see some specials and deals that they're offering. So keep that in mind. And of course, we're going into a very turbulent economic year because of the election. And I'll be talking about some of that in the news today. But if you're thinking about diversifying your holdings, Certainly you want to reach out to Swiss America and give them a call or go to their website. So thanks you, Swiss America. We appreciate your continuing sponsorship of WVW-TV programming. And we encourage all of our viewers to, you know, if you're looking for precious metals, to certainly reach out to Swiss America and see what they can do for you. So let's move on to the news. And there's some interesting news. This is, of course, Friday, and we had unemployment Thursday yesterday, which was really sort of non-eventful. But there's some interesting stories that I wanted to catch up on. I think this is a good day on Friday to look at the stories of the week. And I don't always get to everything I want to talk about. And even though I have a half an hour of nonstop talking, there's sometimes more than a half an hour worth to talk about. But one of the interesting stories I wanted to touch base on today is that I have talked in the past about liquid natural gas and how that's a thing. And I explained, and let me just go back and do a little retro on explanation of liquefied or liquid natural gas, which is abbreviated LNG. And what we know is that natural gas is effectively produced by the deterioration of organic matter. That's why when you go to a swamp, if you go to the swamp, there will be sometimes a fireball coming out of the swamp. And in days of yore, in superstitious times, people would, you know, just attribute that flaming from the swamp as being an evil spirit or a ghost or some supernatural phenomenon. Well, what we know is that methane is created by the deterioration of organic matter. And it happens in swampland, and of course it happens deep under the ground when there are oil wells. There's always natural gas involved because it's the decomposition of organic matter that produces the methane molecules. And methane, CH4, if you're interested, is what is the compound. If you go to a hydrocarbon chain, if this goes back to organic chemistry, which some of us struggled with and others slept through, but basically you have the CH4, one carbon molecule and four hydrogen molecules, that combines to be a molecule of methane. And of course, methane is an interesting compound because it burns. It doesn't necessarily explode unless it's pressurized, but in the natural state, methane burns. And that's why we use natural gas to run a lot of heating and furnaces up here in the North Country. The gas utility basically captures vast quantities of methane, and they pipe it up here through great big pipes that use electric pumps to pump the gas up from the Gulf of Mexico and wherever to the end users up here in the north, and we heat our homes with natural gas, okay? So methane has been around a very long time. And it's been commercialized. It became a real thing back in the 1950s and 1940s as America shifted from heating their homes with coal to primarily in the bigger cities, the gas utility, the gas company would show up and they would make a market in taking this natural gas. And of course, it has to be cleaned or treated, as they call it. And it's basically treated at the source to pipeline standards, and then it's moved along the pipelines, great big pipelines up here. It's the Chicago hub, and then from there it feeds out into the distribution systems to people's homes, and you can heat your house or warm your hot water and cook on natural gas on your stove. And that's the world of natural gas. Well, along the way, of course, this is a fossil fuel, and I think this is becoming old terminology because in the olden days, they thought there were a bunch of dead dinosaurs rotting under the earth, way, way deep in the earth, and somehow they were producing not only oil for our cars, but natural gas as well. Well, we kind of come to the conclusion after the 1970s, we were supposed to run out by 1972, and here we are, 2023, and there's more natural gas and oil than ever. So maybe there's either more dinosaurs down there than we knew about, or perhaps there's some other thing happening. And I'm sort of the latter view that for what mankind knows about the Earth, what we're discovering is that it's a lot more complicated than anyone had thought with respect to the strata of material and organic material. But one thing we know is within the crust of the earth, there's a whole lot of organic stuff rotting away, and it produces methane. So about the time, you know, the natural gas industry built out from the 1970s on up into New England now, but, you know, they pretty well have gas back in the 1980s when I was living there in school. Natural gas was an up and coming thing. But at the end of the day, natural gas has become a rather remarkable commodity, because not only can you take it out of the ground and you can put it in a great big, you know, you treat it, you put it in a great big pipe, you pump it over to the other part of the country and people heat their homes, but you can take natural gas and you can actually change its state. If you remember back in your high school physics class, if perhaps, maybe they don't teach this anymore, but back in the old days, you would have learned that there are three states of matter. There is solid, and then there is liquid, and then there is gaseous, okay? And in order to change the state of a compound, it takes a rather tremendous amount of energy to make something go from a solid state to a liquid, and from a liquid to gas. Now, if we think about ice and water, well, it doesn't take a whole lot of energy, because basically ice will melt at 32 degrees Fahrenheit and become water. And then if you cook that water at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, which takes a lot of energy, you can turn the water into steam, okay? So the whole process of converting matter takes a whole lot of energy to do. Well, not so long ago, back in the 1990s and beyond, into the 21st century here, what has emerged is a market for natural gas. If you can take the gas coming out of the gas well, which is gas, and you can shrink it into a liquid, then you can combine and consolidate the gas into a liquid form, and liquids can be transported. Because if you watch the propane dealer guys, they have these big trucks and they're moving these propane around. It's people who aren't on the natural gas pipe will most likely use propane or heating oil. But they figured out if you can take natural gas and shrink it down into a liquid, then you can transport the liquid offshore, far away. You can put it in a big tanker, and we've talked about this in the past. So what happens is there are natural gas liquefaction facilities, which is an LNG terminal, liquid natural gas terminal, where raw natural gas comes into a machine, and the machine basically cools that gas down using a lot of energy to do that. This is not a simple process, but you can shrink it down to a liquid state, put it in a boat, and ship it offshore and sell it to somebody. And that's a business. That's a profit center. That's the way liquid natural gas has emerged. It's very capital intensive. There's a lot of money involved. You've got to have the gas input. You've got to have the chillers, and the chillers take phenomenal amounts of electricity. And then you shrink this stuff down, and then you have to put it in a boat that keeps it cool long enough to get across the ocean blue to the terminal on the other side, where they attach a nozzle to it, and you have to very carefully extract that liquid natural gas, because if you extract it too fast, it will expand rather rapidly, and basically that's what an explosion is. So there's a whole process. You've got to shrink it down, ship it across the ocean cold, so you got that boat's got to keep that liquid cold, and then you get to the terminal over in Germany, and then you gently let the stuff out into the system over there, and you have magically taken gas and you have transported it across the ocean, and then you can re-expand it, and then the Germans can heat their homes and cook and use hot water and whatever it is the Germans do with our natural gas. Well, that's how the market works. And of course, it's a business, and there are people involved and companies, big energy companies that do this. This is what they do. Well, a long segue or lead into this news story today is that the Biden administration has announced that they are going to put a freeze on new export permits for LNG. So you can't just go set one of these up all by yourself. You have to have a federal permit to do this, you see. And you can imagine the environmental impact of a facility that is like an oil refinery, only instead of taking petroleum and refining it into useful products like gasoline and kerosene and jet fuel and all that, which is a big environmental problem in and of itself, you are doing another thing to fuel. So you need a federal permit. Well, they are suspending the federal permits because they want to determine the climate impact of the LNG market. Now, of course, if you've spent billions of dollars in capital to build a facility, and of course, you're going to have to get state and local cooperation if you're going to do an LNG liquefaction plant. These are things that a lot of neighborhoods perhaps don't want in their backyard. They get over the NIMBY factor, and you get the thing permitted, and it's built, and there's, you know, billions of dollars in capital. And then all of a sudden, the administration announces that in order to analyze the environmental impact, we're going to suspend permits, which means that you're not going to be able to ship stuff in the future. You can still honor your existing contracts, but it puts a real damper on these businesses who are looking for, you know, sky's the limit revenues, you know, the trees will grow to the sky, and suddenly the trees aren't going to grow at all. They've been chopped off. And of course, we're going to go through this environmental process. And there's some thought, you know, environmental thought to that, because when you think about the natural gas process, like I said, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to turn that gas, the methane gas, which in normal temperatures, which is where we live on Earth, the normal temperature, methane exists as a gas. And you got to cool that down to turn it into a liquid. And there's a lot of emissions involved in the electricity generated too. It's like the electricity that they generate to use to power electric cars. You see, it's one thing to not emit, so you can buy an electric car and feel real good about not emitting carbon into the air. You know, your virtue signal, your righteousness. But you fail to factor in the coal plant back, you know, down the road that's providing the electrons, so you can charge your car. It's exactly the same thing with the concentration or the cooling of methane. And methane is a very, very, it takes a lot of energy to chill the methane into a liquid state. So they want to look at that. And then, of course, when you put it in a boat, and these are tankers, these are great big tankers, and we know with the Red Sea issue that, that the transportation supply lines are struggling at this point, which puts a strain on the entire the merchant fleet, sailing the ocean blue from all sorts of countries. But you have to think about the fuel necessary to transport that frozen or that liquefied natural gas to Europe. I'm going to pick on the Europeans. We go like this both ways around the world selling LNG. We sell to the Chinese, we sell to the Germans, okay. But let's just talk about the Atlantic route. And you have to think about the fuel expended to get that LNG over to Germany, you see. And then when it pulls into the port, then the Germans are going to have to de-liquefy that gas, turn it back into a gaseous state without blowing, Frankfurt off the map, or I shouldn't say Frankfurt, pick somebody, one of the port cities. Effectively, you have to do that carefully, and that takes energy. And then, of course, once the gas is in the system, then it goes. So the environmental crowd has said, we have to take a look at this and what the climate impact is. And because this is an election year, the Biden administration issues this freeze on these permits because there's no harm, no foul. Because effectively, you've got forward contracts to ship LNG from here to Germany or from here to China, and those are longer-term contracts. They don't buy one boat of liquid LNG at a time. They effectively, there's a forward contract where you're selling so many barrels per day or BTUs or whatever the metric is. There's an energy metric. So when you get a ship, and I'm sure the ships are standard sizes, so if you get a ship showing up, there's X number of BTU or barrels per day or whatever the metric is. And these things sell as commoditized units, and that's how they're priced. So effectively what happens is for purposes of 2024, the ships will still sail and the gas will still be released over in Germany and China. But it's very symbolic. The problem with doing that, of course, is it creates additional political risk in the energy business and that energy sector. And that's never good because they have capital requirements and perhaps refinancing requirements, or they may be going to refinance a piece of equipment. And then suddenly the banks are saying, well, if you can't sell, LNG next year, maybe we pull back on the credit. So it's very destabilizing to see. And that's one of those things I was talking about with in 2024. And of course, this is a financial show. It's not a political show. But when you look at the political games played to preserve power, it has a dramatic and real impact on the economy itself. And those people who are less worried about, you know, the politics of Washington and more worried about building American infrastructure and American business and global competitiveness are having to deal with this type of noise. So we'll watch that story carefully to see how this all plays out. But it's a big deal because natural gas exports were up almost 20% last year. And it's a big thing because if we remember the European situation, you know, now we're all distracted by the Middle East situation. But if you remember 6 months ago when, you know, Ukraine and the war with Russia and all this was a big, big noise, that has very much destabilized Europe as a continent or as a cluster, you know, the European Union and the ancillary states. That's a very turbulent and troubling problem with this Ukrainian situation. And as a result of that, a lot of the NATO countries have put a lot of resources and into that effort, and energy is becoming a problem. And of course, with the Germans, they're sort of blessed with the same climate we have here in Wisconsin, where it gets cold in winter and people tend to like to have a warm house to come home to at night. And energy is a big thing. Especially when you're the largest manufacturer in Europe, it's not just people heating their homes and sitting around waiting, you know, sitting around the fire and putting on another pair of lederhosen. Effectively, Germans produce a lot of stuff, including amazing automobiles, and all of that takes energy. So when we start to see this political gamesmanship to calculate the carbon emissions of a boat transferring LNG and how much of this and that, and it may be something to think about from an academic perspective, but it has a significant impact on the economy. And of course, this being the silly season of the election 2024, we'll see what happens. And why would the Biden administration do that? Well, it's because you want to shore up the environmental vote, of course. But, you know, the reality is, I don't think that the radically environmental crowd is going to decide to suddenly turn and vote for Donald Trump because Mr. Biden didn't slap a permit freeze on LNG. I think his political risk is pretty limited on that one. But again, this is not a political show, but I just want to point out that as we, you know, every 4 years, we have an American economy that's 24/7, 365 for 250 plus years. The economy goes, but every once in a while you get into the crazy season, and here we are. So it's a long diatribe on LNG, but I think it's something to watch. There are some competitive issues. I mean, certainly we can sell our LNG surplus into a global market and bring much needed foreign currency back home to the good old United States. But at the same time, we want to make sure that everybody in the United States has all the natural gas they need at a price they can afford. And right now we're in a situation where it is profitable to sell natural gas, liquefied natural gas, to people who will pay a higher price than you can get in the United States. And the delta is enough to support that entire industry. So it's a complicated thing. And I guess from the perspective of American energy independence, what we've always been told since the 1970s is the energy crisis, and we're going to be shut off, we'll all freeze to death. Well, you know, here we're still selling, 20% more. That's 4 million barrels per day on average of LNG to foreign markets. So we'll see where that goes. So let's move on to the next story. The next story I wanted to talk about briefly is that yesterday I talked about existing home sales were down in 2023 and new home sales were up in 2023. And my theory, my hypothesis, of course, is that because home builders have to keep in business and they have to continue to sell homes, they need revenue because revenue minus expenses is income. And if that number goes negative, they go out of business. So they were buying down the rates of the mortgage rate, so that if a person wanted to buy a new home, you could get a mortgage at 5% rather than going into the existing home market where nobody's going to buy down your rate. There's some ways you can do it creatively, but for purposes of this discussion, the existing home sales market doesn't have an institutionalized way to buy down rates. So therefore, existing home sales were in the tank and new home sales were up because the choice was you go into the market and you overpay for an existing home that needs a new roof, a new siding, whatever, or you can buy a brand new house and get a 5% mortgage. Well, for a lot of people, you know, new neighborhood, a new house, new roof, 5% mortgage, that's a no-brainer. Well, okay, so today's story is that the pending home sales in December are up. And as I talk about, the housing numbers are very, very important to the American economy because the housing sector is so big. It's not only the builders, but it's the materials that go into it, the labor, and there's the painting and decorating and landscaping and all the fun stuff. And when people move into a new home, whether it's existing or brand new, you know, you tend to go out and spend some money, spruce the place up a little bit. Well, all of these numbers, when you look at them, they seem to be inconsistent. You know, how can pending home sales be up when existing home sales are down and new home sales are up? Well, it just goes to show you, when you see this pending home sales number, it's up in December because the interest rates came down a little bit. So with, between new homes and existing homes, even though existing home sales were really low last year, there's enough that pending homes, which means from the time you put the offer in and it's accepted until the day you close, it's that pipeline of homes in the pipe, okay? And that's a very, very flexible, fluid number. Because it depends on how quickly can you, you know, from the time you enter into an agreement to purchase a home until the time you actually close and get the deed or at least the trust deed, that window can be, depends on a lot of things, including how fast can the underwriters actually write the mortgages. And of course, those mortgages, inevitably, most of them are syndicated on. So anyway, that's why when you see pending home sales and you think, boy, why are these, you know, every month these numbers are up and down and up and down. It would behoove you, if you wanted to follow such things, to understand what each of those metrics mean. And I see this as consistent, that pending home sales, existing and new, would be up. And of course, sometimes there are people who would like to get a deal done before the end of the year. And December is a very busy year for deal lawyers and accountants and deal doers, because you know you want to get your deal done before New Year's Eve. And that's why it's not unusual to see pending sales up, because everybody's trying to get to the close. Okay, I also wanted to talk about the reported core PCE deflator, and these are another high-end technical terms, has declined year over year in December to 2.9%. And in November, it was 3.2%. So we've got about a 0.4% decline in the core PCE deflator indicator, which suggests that at the core level, the inflation rate is coming down. Now, why is this important? Well, they report this number every month, but keep in mind what our friends at the Federal Open Market Committee are going to be doing next, what is that, Wednesday the 31st, they're meeting on the 31st, and their big decision, what's the big decision that the Federal Open Market Committee does? Well, they tweak the interest rates, okay? And if you raise the interest rates, you slow the economy, you pull the punch bowl back, and if you lower the interest rates, you push the punch bowl closer to the edge, everybody has more punch, and the party livens up, the economy grows. Okay, well, that's what they're going to be doing next week. So it's not uncommon and unusual to see stories emerging this week that say, you know, that core inflation number is it's coming down. We're at 2.9, and remember, the bogey for the Federal Reserve is 2%. Well, you know, last year, you know, it was 9%, and they slammed the brakes on the economy by jacking the interest rates and crushing the housing market. Well, now we're seeing statistics coming out that suggest that, you know, the work of the Fed is paying off, and there is a lag, frankly. If you're going to fiddle around the interest rates, it takes 6 months for everything to trickle through. But at the end of the day, you would expect the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee, not that they rely on the news for their decisions, because they have statisticians and econometric people that are doing all sorts of pushing of the pencil for them. But what I'm seeing for public consumption is that we're seeing the government reporting that inflation is calming down. And that gives the Fed a window, or at least more of a fig leaf, to either keep interest rates constant or actually start to lower them. And of course, we've had various signals from Fed presidents around the country. The Atlanta president suggested that we may want to keep our interest rates flat. The last two times the Federal Open Market Committee met, they kept interest rates flat. They didn't raise them, they didn't lower them. They were perfectly happy to leave the punch bowl where it's sitting, because it seems that the party is dying down and we don't want to move the punch bowl. Well, at some point, the Federal Reserve chair after the last meeting signaled we're going to be cutting rates, and then a bunch of Federal Reserve presidents came out and said, wait, we're not quite there yet. So we'll see what the Open Market Committee does. But when I see a story that suggests that the core inflation rate, the deflator, it's a component. Remember, you have headline inflation number, then you have the core number, and this is a calculation within the core, and it's telling us that inflation is calming down, which is really wonderful as you're heading into an election year. So the question becomes next week, will the Fed actually reduce the rates by a quarter in January when they were projected to do so in March, or will they say we're going to continue to hold flat, but we're watching this very carefully, and rates may have to be cut just after the primary season before the general election? You see, we'll see. We don't know how that works, but I think it's interesting to note that the public number is suggesting that inflation is cooling, and that's a good thing. But it's happening within a very difficult environment. And of course, I talk about this ad nauseum, and that has to do with the national debt. Well, I'm out of time for today. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you Monday. Bye.